Hey everybody, I just want to say thanks for listening. It's Spencer here, and this week we have an amazing top 5 show for you, where we each go over our top 5 cards of Guilds of Ravnica. However, there is a little bit of an audio issue at the beginning of the show until about halfway through. The audio changes a couple of times as I'm trying to adjust the audio and make sure that it's working correctly for the listeners. So I did get it fixed. Halfway through the show, it's perfect, but I just want to apologize for the technical difficulties. I was on a new machine, but I believe that all of the steps that I've been taking over the last few months to get the show where I want it to be is going to fix the audio permanently, and I'm really excited about it, and I hope that the podcast listeners specifically are too, rather than the video listeners, because this was all for you, and I think that we finally have the final solution. So thanks everybody for listening, and enjoy this week's episode of Constructive Criticism.
Everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm back from the dead! I've been here forever, guys! And I'm joined by my less dead co-hosts, Matt Kling.
Hey, how's it going?
And Michael Hinderocker. I know. Define less dead. I know what you're going to say, Michael.
I wasn't going to say that.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you even one bit.
Fair enough.
You know what I do believe, though? I believe in our sponsors. You can check them out at mtgoasis.com. You can get 15% off your first order by using code CCMTG at checkout. You can get 4% off of every order by using code Would That Be Good. You can check out our other sponsor at InGaming. Use the code CCMTG10 at checkout to get 10% off your order and give us a little bit of a kickback. So thank you so much to both of our sponsors. And we'll talk more about those guys later. You know what else we'll talk about a little bit later, Michael? Our main topic today, which is the top 5 cards for each of us in Guilds of Ravnica, which isn't really true. I didn't actually pick like the best 5 cards. I just picked 5 cards I wanted to talk about.
I think we all just picked literally any cards that we thought were cool.
I think that's better, right? Like,
yeah, I think it's at least more interesting. I mean, people are often going to be able to tell what the 5, flagships of the set are or whatever, but it's a lot more interesting when you're like, these are the 5 cards that I actually think might be more interesting than necessarily good.
Well, cards I at least have something to say about, right? Like,
you know, who does have something to say is the rest of the network. You can check them out. Even Odds. Even Odds is posted today. Their first episode is posted. I posted it right before we started recording this. That's by Mason Clark and Trey. I can't pronounce Trey's last name, so I'm not going to try. It's a podcast about the PPTQ grind. One of the things that Mason and Trey felt like is that they both love constructive criticism, but what happened is we stopped grinding PPTQs and started grinding GPs, and they felt like there was a hole that they could fill there. And they're not wrong. We really did stop grinding PPTQs. So, there you go. You can also check out Common Knowledge and Homeward Path. They're two other amazing podcasts. With that being said, let's get into our first topic, which is hashtag always improving. Hashtag always improving is the point of the show. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse, and we want to do what we can all the time to improve ourselves. With that being said, Michael, other than you learning how to sit up in your chair so people can see you on the video, what did you learn and improve at Magic this week?
I didn't really have a lot of, tournaments of any sort coming up, really. So I mostly just kind of played whatever I wanted all week, and that was kind of great. I had a really good time just playing a bunch of weird stuff. And
well, you learned that Lingering Souls is still better than Vengevine and Zombie Bombardment.
Yeah, I mean, you can even entomb it. How many times have you entombed a Lingering Souls?
Zero. Never. I've never done that. Although, you know what? That might not be true. I might have done that in Cube once.
I have entombed a Blood Guest before, though.
On turn one, no, I wouldn't say I've done that.
Turn one in Tomb Lingering Souls. Get them.
That is one way to live your life. Matt, what did you do to improve at Magic this week?
Well, so this isn't necessarily something that I've done already, but more like a mindset that I've adapted. And basically, I realized at some point that I was kind of phoning in a lot of the bigger events, especially when they're like something that I can do every week, like online PTQs and things of that nature.
Yeah.
I found that I wasn't playing decks that I thought would give me the best chance of winning just because I wanted to play them for more fun, I guess.
Sure.
But I've mostly decided to move away from that and just give myself the best possible chance to win as many matches of Magic as possible.
Okay. That's valid. I have a different type of thing that has to do with similar types of events, I guess. I'm quitting TPTQs. Just altogether, I have zero plans to play in them. So this is something that I was, you know, one of the things we talk about in constructive criticism is like, you know, doing the things that make you happy, because that's like the most important thing, regardless of Magic, right? And like, I was thinking about my life, thinking about how I spent my time, and I was like, PVDQs are like the biggest time suck. I don't like them. I don't enjoy them. I don't want to attend them. I'm not even that happy when I win one. Like, what am I doing playing PPTQs? And I was like, well, what if I just don't play them? What if I just play online PTQs and stream it? Because, like, what I really love to do right now in Magic is stream and get better and try that with the viewers and the listeners. And it was, like, it was pretty easy for me to decide that I'm just going to not play PPTQs and just play online PTQs now. So I don't know if that's an improving moment. It is an improving moment in, like, the sake of my life, right? Like, understanding the things that are making me unhappy and adjusting accordingly.
Yeah, it feels like a quality of life improvement for you, at least, specifically.
Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, I agree with just sort of identifying, like, I think trying to identify things that you are doing that you like and things that you're doing that you don't like, and, you know, you don't have to, it doesn't even have to be a, I will never play in a PPTQ again, but I don't plan on playing a PPTQ. I don't plan on.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, if I want to go play in one day, I'm just going to do it now.
Right.
Like, I can just exactly. Do it.
Like, so. If Manny was like, hey, Spencer, let's go play in a PPTQ, you'd probably say, okay.
Yeah, I would do it. So, all right.
Right. Well, but I think making yourself not feel like a slave to it.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is like, I don't, they're like, one of the things that I really liked about PPTQs at first is I felt like I was getting better at Magic at playing them. And now I just don't feel that way at all. And a huge part of what my enjoyment in Magic is trying to get better and improve the game. And so when I'm not feeling that, and that's not happening for me, it's just tough. It's not, I don't enjoy it. So let's move on to our next segment, which is our Patreon question. If you want to become a patron of the show, you go to patreon.com/ccmtg. Starting at $1 a month, anything that you see fit is really appreciated. It means the world to us. We had some growth over the last month after some tough ones, and it's really appreciated to see those numbers going up again. And it like legitimately means the world to us, so thank you so much. One of our questions this week says, what do you think will be the best deck, the best week one deck? I think that some sort of green stinky strategy will be.
I'm sure that's not a correct for stompy.
Okay, that makes I mean it could he could mean stinky.
Maybe they just really hate green decks.
Seal Leaf and Vinemir seem great out of the gate. I'd like to go first. I actually think that green is where I think that a lot of the power lies in this set. But I think that we also feel that way because so many like of the green strategies haven't been seen play recently. So we see powerful green cards and we think, oh, like this is super powerful. This will obviously see play. So, but I actually don't see it the way I think a lot of people are seeing it. Like I see it more moving away from Steel Leaf and actually going like straight up turn one. Elvish Mystic or Llanowar Elves, turn two, Knight of their History of Benalia, and then, you know, turn four, the other knights. Like, there's Knight of Autumn, and then this the four mana, green, white, Is it a 4/4 that makes two 2/2s when it dies?
That sounds right, yeah. I think they might even have vigilance or something like that.
But... yeah, and it is a knight, and it, I don't think they're knights, though, right?
If they have vigilance, then I'm going to say yes. But if they don't, then probably not.
Sound reasoning. I forget exactly what that card creates when it dies.
Yeah, I think that like that's kind of where I see it. And that deck also will lend itself to playing like, you know, some a little bit like the 4-mana removal spell, the Oblivion Ring with Convoke and things like that, a little bit better than the other decks. I don't know, that's what I see week one. I think Knights is like a really powerful strategy.
That's interesting, definitely. I imagine that you'll win almost every game that you cast History of Benalia on turn two on the play.
Especially week one.
Right. Well, in my experience, History of Benalia is just insanely powerful in general. But I do worry a little bit because so far, every History of Benalia deck I've ever played has been a one-trick pony. It's basically History of Benalia and then 56 cards that are a lot worse than anything your opponent's doing.
Sure.
Yeah, specifically not named History of Benalia.
I mean, that's the thing, right? Is all these good knights got printed and you now can play History earlier with Elvish Mystic in addition to the other three drop knights that you have availability to.
Yeah, I mean...
That might be true. I'm a little skeptical still of the mana working as well as you would hope it would. Just because, Sun Petal Grove, Sun Petal Grove Land War Elves has the potential to be kind of awkward. I think that some sort of green deck is likely to be pretty good. I mean, Land War Elves didn't get worse. Goblin Chainwhirler probably got at least a little bit worse.
Right.
Nullhide Ferox seems pretty sweet.
Yeah, I think that's where people are kind of seeing the green decks going, right? Is like those, like that, the 6/6, the pelt guy. Yeah. Like that deck, yes, definitely seems powerful.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like a reasonable. So what I would say is this: like a lot of the time with more complex, like synergy driven decks, or just decks where like the mana is harder, or where it's harder to figure out sort of how you should be playing flex slots, it's just harder to get there immediately. And while I wouldn't say that I'm 100% sure green is the best deck, I'm 100% sure green is at least fine. And I'm way more likely to be pretty close on what my list should be playing green than I am probably playing anything else.
Yeah, I think that's totally reasonable. I think it's pretty easy to say that blue-white control will be pretty good in this next format going forward. But it's probably going to be a lot worse than it will be later in week one, because it's going to be hard to know what specific cards you should play because you don't know what the metagame looks like specifically.
Yeah,
your mana is also pretty bad in blue-white.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it can be Esper or Jeskai or whatever it needs to be to support the mana base. Yeah. But
a lot of people have been showing me like different mid-range lists, and I actually feel the same way about mid-range that Matt just expressed about control. I don't really know what my threats need to be in mid-range to be big enough to combat the aggro decks, but small enough to get it under control in this format. So I'm not sure where, like, if the green deck that I suppose, like, that's kind of a mid-rangey deck. So, like, if that deck shows up, that means that you have to have a more controlling mid-range deck, which means that, like, blue-white control gets way, way better. So it's kind of hard on both of those fronts.
Definitely. This all being said, I haven't sketched anything out specifically, but the one thing that I do know is that I would do my very best to play Goblin Chainwhirler in week one, because I think that everybody is convinced that it won't be as prevalent as it was. So there, almost every deck list that I've seen has been on the, you know, this deck probably didn't work before because Chainwhirler was oppressive, and now it should be fine.
Okay. All right.
So then I, you know, show them what's what and play four Chainwhirlers.
I want to thank our patrons so much for that question. It really is appreciated, and hopefully that helped you out. You can ask questions too. Go to patreon.com/ccmtg, starting at $1 a month. Anything that you see fit, we really appreciate it. So, no deck to this week, and then we'll be skipping the power rankings as we have our own power rankings of cards in Guilds of Ravnica.
By power rankings, you mean?
You mean five random assorted cards by each person?
All right, as long as we're clear.
Here's the thing about me and lists is I'm not good at doing a podcast with like actual top five lists and rankings and stuff, because I just care about the rankings and I'm just get obsessed with the rankings instead of talking about the cards. But when we do it this way, I just get to talk about the cards. So there you go.
I just can't count that high. Like a really big number.
Well, I mean,
you're trying to rank them all in at like ladder style.
Yeah, I just can't.
I don't think that's
you gotta hire. You gotta hire somebody like the coaches do for the coaches poll, man.
Okay.
Yeah. Like a pick order for constructed.
Yeah, exactly. I'll let someone smarter than me figure this out.
So let's get right into the main topic this week. It is the top five cards, Guild of Ravnica edition, and we'll start with me. It looks like. So, Michael, why don't you go ahead and read us our first card on my list? So
Spencer's first card is Knight of Autumn, which is one, a green and a white for a 2/1 Dryad Knight. And when Knight of Autumn enters the battlefield, choose one. Put two +1/+1 counters on Knight of Autumn. Destroy target artifact or enchantment, or you gain 4 life.
It's funny. I've heard two people say that they don't think this card is playable in standard. Like, it's just basically a modern card. I have literally no idea what they're looking at. This card seems like actually insane to me. Like, this is like a slam dunk 4 of in your green aggressive midrange decks. Not even a question to me. Michael?
I would say this card lines up almost uniquely poorly against Goblin Chain Whirler.
Because it can't, it dies to it and it can't block it.
Yeah, somehow, no matter what you choose, it
makes them sad. That's true. This has always been my complaint with Chain Whirler, though, is that the first strike is just like so ridiculous.
And the secret is it just lines up insanely well against everything.
Yeah, it's just like, why does this have first strike? I don't understand. Yeah,
I'm not saying that automatically makes this a bad card, but this isn't a card I would play in the current format.
Sure. That's fair. I think that is true. However, I think that, you know, we don't know if Chain Whirler is going to be a thing the whole time this card is in standard. And I think that it's just on its power level alone, it's super high. And then its flexibility to replace cards in your modern decks is just out of this world.
It's definitely interesting. I think that the difference is that you're probably rating the fail case a lot higher than myself and others probably are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think a 3-mana 4/3 is not blowing the doors off, and I think that's what it's going to be 85% of the time, at least.
In standard?
Yes.
Yeah,
probably in any format, honestly, but like when you actually are playing an older format where you 100% need answers to like problem enchantments and artifacts, it makes sense to rate, because you're already playing something like Reclamation Sage, right, in a lot of these decks.
Yeah, I think this card's flexibility is pretty powerful in a lot of different sideboards in modern. I think that the fact that it's a knight is what makes me interested in it in standard. Like, I really am interested in this green-white deck. I should probably get to brewing it for my deck tech next week, and that's what I'm doing my deck tech on.
Is there any other reason to want it to be a knight aside from History of Benalia?
No, basically just that.
That card does not need the help. I guarantee you that having extra knights in your deck is mostly just nonsense.
I mean, I've also played History of Benalia decks, and I think that while you're mostly right, I think it will snowball more than you think it will. Especially having another knight that's specifically a 3-drop, like another high-powered 3-drop to curve from Elvish Mystic into. That's something that I'm really considering here.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, I think this card is really flexible, but I'm more excited about getting this card with Green Sun Zenith or something like that than I am about just casting it.
Sure.
Like, the flexibility part is super sweet. Like, I love that this is a card that if you just want, like, 4 power for 3 mana, you know, if you draw it, it's not bad.
Yeah.
It's totally fine. But if you need a tutor for it, like, being a Reclamation Sage that can also gain you 4 life and also just is fine to draw in main deck games.
This is a card that I've thought a lot about in Naya Shift. You guys know that listeners probably know that I've played a ton of that deck. It's a deck I really enjoy. But the sideboard slots are just like super jammed in that deck. Like, you just don't have enough sideboard slots. And this could help that.
I was thinking about this in like Maverick or something along those lines.
Oh, in Legacy, like, it seems like really powerful. Like, nice like yeah, in the Punishing Fire deck too. It could be a sweet sideboard card.
That could be as well.
Yeah. All right. What's up next on my list, Michael?
So our next card is Circuitous Route, which is a sorcery for 3 and a green, and it says search your library for up to 2 basic land and or gate cards and put them onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library.
Matt, why don't you go first on this one?
Yeah, it makes me wonder how much we're going to be incentivized to play actual guild gates in our decks. Because at first I read this card and I was like, wow, this is Explosive Vegetation that also tutors for dual lands, you know? And then now I'm thinking about it and the cost is actually insanely high, right? If you actually want to tutor for a duel, like you have to actually play guild gates in your deck that you're going to draw sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels a lot more just like Explosive Vegetation to me, which is still a fantastic card, don't get me wrong. And maybe there's some chance that you play like 1 guild gate in your deck or something.
Okay.
You might play it in limited sometimes too.
Yeah, that's fair. That might be what the extra words are for.
And with a guild gate, they have a guild gate in every pack, so it's just replacing the basic land slot. So, I mean, you're going to have guild gates in limited.
Right.
I think that depending on the deck, tap lands are mostly fine if their upside is that I could fetch them with this to fix my mana. But maybe because you're grabbing 2 lands, it won't matter. Maybe the correct thing is just to play 1 guild gate.
Yeah, I worry that, especially if you're playing a ramp deck where you're really trying to hit a curve.
Yeah, so one of the things
you're going to draw like a tap land on 4.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm really excited about now that we're having this conversation, I posted a green-black ramp list that had 4 of these in it, but I didn't realize that I forgot the Deadweight was in the format, and Deadweight's like a pretty good something to have in your 75 in that deck due to the 3-mana ramp that puts the land into play on tap.
Okay. Sure, you just like want a 1-mana removal spell?
Yeah, if you could just have 2 Deadweight somewhere in the 75, I actually think that it solves a lot of the problems that I was thinking the deck had. So having less guild gates could also help that as well.
Okay.
Just getting to play a couple
The Civic Wayfinder can get guild gates as well, I believe.
Yes, it can, yeah.
Which is kind of sweet.
Yeah, and I'm all about that, those cards. That should be on my list. I definitely have done well with my favorite Borderland Rangers, so... yeah, I think that Explosive Vegetation just in itself is like proven just to be a magic card that always sees play whenever it's like Ranger's Path saw play, Explosive Veg saw play. What was the other one that we had?
Those are the only 2 I can think of.
Was Ranger's Path the one that we had in the 5-color ramp?
Yeah, that was the one in Omnidor.
Okay. Then it's Sylvan something. The one that...
I don't know it.
Anyway, so I think that these effects just are always good because they speed you like so much on your mana and the lands come into play, right? Whereas like, go ahead.
And these are just way more powerful than any of the 3-mana ramp spells ever are.
Mm. Well, yeah, 4 to 7 is, so yeah, 4 to 7 is
3 to 5.
Definitely big. They obviously also, intentionally print cards to make these cards see play, right? Like, it wouldn't make sense to print Explosive Vegetation and then have nothing worth playing that costs more than, you know, 5 mana or whatever.
Right.
Right.
Cool.
Definitely.
What is up next?
Let's see. It looks like the next card is Pelt Collector. And Pelt Collector is green for a 1/1 Elf Warrior that says, whenever another creature you control enters the battlefield or dies, if that creature's power is greater than Pelt Collector's, put a +1/+1 counter on Pelt Collector. As long as Pelt Collector has 3 or more +1/+1 counters on it, it has trample.
Did anyone else read this card and like have to read it again to see if they like had it wrong?
No, it's like experiment 1, right?
Yeah,
well, except it's on death, right? Not on ETB.
Both.
Oh, it's on either. Okay. Sure, so it's just like a better experiment 1?
Yeah.
Well, it can't regenerate, but like mostly probably.
Right.
Yeah, and experiment 1 was like pretty good.
I mean, it was, but it's been basically every deck that's ever had experiment 1 in it had Burning Tree Emissary.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. I don't know. I think that this card... like lets you play, like specifically what it does for the Stompy deck is what I'm kind of interested in, right? Where like my win percentage when I have a turn one Llanowar World Elf is like significantly higher, but when I don't, it's significantly lower because I just don't have enough one drops. So like just getting to play another one drop that I'm like mostly happy playing anything after, just like I am with Llanowar World Elves, is pretty good to me.
I'm hopeful that it's not a horrible late game draw because you'll be able to just like trade off parts of your board sometimes to grow it a little bit.
Right. That and that back half, the back doing that on the back end is like pretty, like not something that you would expect from a one mana card to like give you at the end of the day.
It's hard to say though. That might not be very good. Like I might be kind of overrating that in my head, and I wouldn't be that surprised if I am. So, like. Probably just have to play with it a little bit and kind of see how often that's actually coming up, because the card is a lot different if you're only getting kind of, if it's experiment one and we don't have, you know, Burning Tree Emissary, that's maybe not as good as I think it could be.
It's not the end of the world though if it does end up being just a one drop that is bad in the late game, right? Like almost all of them are.
Yeah, no, but I mean, the card doesn't have to necessarily be great in the late game. Just if you're routinely able to trigger it one turn five or six, that's pretty good.
Yep, I agree.
Right. Is there any other decks that you guys can see this in other than like a green Stompy deck?
Ari Lax posted a cool kind of, it was like green Stompy, but it was playing like Llanowar Elf, Steely Champ. So it was like green Stompy, but it was like elf themed.
Oh, that's interesting.
That you can play Unclaimed Territory because there's a 3-power 2-drop that like mills you and then puts a land on top of your library if you want it. And he had some kind of cool stuff going on there. Cool. I think that was on SCG today.
That's dope.
If any of the like the black green graveyard value decks end up working out, like, you know, Vraska could be a nice engine for this card because you play something and sack it and like it gets 2 counters.
Sure.
It was like halfway between something like that and like a Stompy deck, which was kind of neat. I think like obviously you're gonna have to be pretty aggressive, and I think that just leans to you probably also wanting Llanowar Elves, then probably also Steel Leaf Champion. So it's hard for me to imagine like
any other list that you could end up
mostly an aggressive deck. Just
yeah. I mean, well, I think aggressive is true either way. The question is if it sees play outside of a Steel Leaf Stompy deck.
You wouldn't have to play Steel Leaf Champion necessarily. It's just like Steel Leaf Champion is so good with Llanowar Elves that it's kind of hard.
Yeah, to well, basically, I think your choice becomes basically either play, you know, one color splashing, you know, like basically mono green splashing one color, or you play 3 colors, right? And it really comes down to whether you think that the Steel Leaf Champion's adding more to the deck than 2 other colors would.
In conjunction with Llanowar Elves, the answer is maybe.
Yeah, it's not impossible. I'm not even saying that it's unlikely.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to say. But my first thought with a card like Pelt Collector is not, let's get the Steel Leaf Champions out of the deck.
Well, you know what I want to get into my deck is the next card, Hypothesizzle.
Hypothesizzle is 5 mana for an instant. And it says, so it's 3 blue-red, draw 2 cards, then you may discard a non-land card. When you do, Hypothesizzle deals 4 damage to target creature.
So everybody tells me I'm wrong and that this card is just completely unplayable. And I've literally no idea how they could say that. The only counter to this card saw standard play in Prophetic Bolt, and this one seems better to me.
Remind me what Prophetic Bolt did.
It deals 4 damage to any target, and then you look at the top 4 and put one into your hand.
Okay. That's probably a lot better than this, but also, I think this is...
Okay, maybe it's better.
This is reasonable, but I don't think it's going to see
play. I guess the any... I actually didn't realize that Prophetic Bolt was any target.
I mean, there's certainly that, but I think that 1 out of 4 is a lot better than... Draw 2, discard 1. Discard.
Especially because it says discard non-land.
Right.
Yeah. One of the things that I want to talk about with this card, though, is how unique of an effect it is for a control deck to be able to gain card advantage while clearing the board that's in not in raw cards and not in Wrath effects. Like that's powerful. Like that's not something that they normally get to do. If I have to tap out to draw extra cards, I have to do that and to dig into my deck. And like, I don't get the opportunity to interact with your board when I do that. But in this case, I do get the opportunity to interact with your board if I want to.
Right. I mean, it's actually closer to cycle if you're actually going to use the four damage, but it's true. It is still digging you to your win conditions and your other answers while dealing with the board, which is powerful.
I mean, more than cycling, it's more like cycle the worst card in your hand, right? Like,
right.
It cycles itself kind of, but then it like sometimes you have like, I don't have enough of a mana advantage for this Syncopate to be good, or they don't have a creature small enough for this Magma Spray to be like, so it's maybe a little bit better than that. I'm still all in on the naming convention theory.
This won't see play because it's called Hypothesizzle?
I think if this was supposed to be good and constructed, it would not be called Hypothesizzle.
All right.
I'm like actually just not joking.
No, I imagine that's probably right too. I mean, often you can tell by the arts too. Like if something has like really great art, it's usually meant to be something that's good and constructed, you know.
That's I don't know who illustrated this, but I feel like that was kind of
a that was a sewer dagger.
I didn't look at the art on this one. I wasn't referring to Hypothesis specifically. I'm just saying that is a rule.
You know, you almost like assassinated that artist. Speaking of which, Assassin's Trophy is next. Michael, why don't you give us that one?
God, that was.
We're segueing our training grounds.
That was a not that strong segue. All
right. Well, you know, you could read Assassin's Trophy for us, Michael.
Assassin's Trophy is an instant for a black and a green, and it says destroy target permanent and opponent controls. Its controller may search their library for a basic land card, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle their library.
I think that Trey and Mason talked about this card quite a bit when they were doing the show. This card seems really powerful to me. Like, it's not even like a question that it will see play, right?
Yeah.
I have a hard time believing that this isn't the best card in the set. I mean, I have a hard time wrapping my mind around how this isn't just like format changing in every format. Maybe not Legacy.
I mean, it depends, right? It changes standard before it even gets in there, right? All of a sudden, you're hard to deal with threats like enchantments and artifacts just aren't that now.
Right.
And you know, the same thing will be true about this card when we think about the number of basic lands that we play in our decks in both Modern, that Field of Ruin is already forcing things a little bit differently, as well as, you know, Legacy now. We have this plus Snapcaster Mage in Legacy that could completely change the game. In lots of different ways. So it's certainly going to do a lot.
Yeah, in Legacy, I worry that the uncounterability of Abrupt Decay is just going to be better 99% of the time.
It would have to sort of be a new archetype. My 2 mana is a lot in Legacy.
Sure.
Right.
And 4 mana is even more, right? So like I'm talking about a huge, huge mana investment play to do that plus snap in Legacy.
That I would be surprised if we're playing this in Snapcaster Mage in the same deck.
I mean, it's not impossible for some kind of Sultai deck to be that way. My thought would be that you'd rather have Abrupt Decay almost all the time because you have to play against Daze a lot.
Sure.
Yeah, I think specifically like Delver, Wasteland style stuff. Like, it's really hard to play. One of the reasons that Miracles, I think, has been fairly successful for a pretty long period of time is just that, like, it's very hard for you to get wastelanded, and if we're going to actually try to play three colors, you're going to get wastelanded all the time. I'm ambivalent about this card in Legacy, but I think this card is like pretty clearly great in Modern, and I'm sure it's good in Standard.
I just want to say that I think it's completely underrated how much this is going to change the dynamic of the green black versus Tron matchups. I've heard, you know, several people say that they want to play Tron early on because the green black players are going to think they have, you know, a good matchup now. And I actually think that the Tron players are probably wrong.
Yeah. I was going to say, I can't wait to line up my 4 Field of Ruin, 4 Assassin's Trophy, some sideboard surgicals and just,
yeah,
I'm going to kill every basic land in your deck. We're going to kill all of them.
Right, exactly. I mean, honestly, the mid-range decks were often beating Tron just when they drew a single Fulminator Mage, like, let alone if you're just main decking four Assassin's Trophies. Like, the matchup's going to be an actual joke.
Yeah, especially, like,
I don't even know that, like, Tron is playable against that card.
Like Thoughtseize, like, Thoughtseize Plus just makes it basically impossible, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I mostly agree with that.
This is my dream, man. Banning Urza's Tower the cool way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're just going to completely phase it out of the format. I don't know. I could see this card being potentially a mistake, though, honestly, going forward. But we'll see.
It's hard to say.
I'm at least happy that they're willing to take chances. I'm actually really happy to see any card that I think is on the cusp of level like that, because it means that they're taking chances.
Yeah, and you can always ban things, right? Like, if this card is too good, it's a lot easier to undo it than it is to, like, you know, 3 more months of the same decks.
Right, yeah, I agree.
Right, like, and if you're not willing to take some chances designing stuff in terms of being unsure about their power level in older formats, like, you know, what's the point?
Right.
Yep, I agree.
Well, next up is Beast Whisperer. It's Matt's first card. Beast Whisperer is green 2 for a 2/3. It's an elf druid, and whenever you cast a creature spell, draw a card. Matt?
Yeah, so I think that this is... I mean, it's pretty interesting to have a Glimpse of Nature style effect in Modern. It's really hard to say whether 4 mana is going to be too big of a cost, but it is noteworthy that you can Cavern of Souls it in. So I like that a lot. And it's also a Glimpse of Nature that can theoretically last for multiple turns. If for whatever reason it doesn't get killed and you don't win the game that turn.
If it doesn't get killed and your opponent doesn't concede.
Well, yeah, but they're only going to concede because it still has that ability, right? If they're conceding.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I could see this in Legacy, like between Green Sun Zenith and you know, Natural Order and things like that. It's possible that you actually just
can go
4 mana is just fine. Yeah, yeah. It might just be fine to have a Glimpse of Nature that you can tutor for.
That's a cooler thought than I'd had. Yeah, just like a spicy one of.
Yeah, I was super confused. I thought you were going to talk about playing this card in Standard, and I was like, this seems like mostly nonsense, man.
I don't think this card sees play in Standard.
Yeah,
I would honestly be a little surprised if this was good enough for Modern.
It's possible that they just don't make enough mana in Modern quickly enough.
They don't.
We were talking about this, though, and like I think it specifically has to do with not having like fire effects, because where I like this card is not in the early game, but like as like
grinding through your deck for a couple of turns
for in grindier matchups.
Yeah, right. That makes sense.
Because I worry that in Modern, like by the time you can make 4 mana, it's so hard to have cards left over. Like we started trying to come up with combinations that made 4 and still had like more than 1 or 2 cards in hand. We did this probably a week or two ago, and it was like not as easy as you'd think.
Yeah, definitely.
Which has to be like Heritage Druid, Twin and Delete. Otherwise, you're just not going to have anything left over.
Right. It's true. Is it? Are the creatures cast triggers or enter the battlefields?
They're cast triggers.
Okay.
For Beast Whisperer.
Okay. So, like, it doesn't work if you company into something with Beast Whisperer in play?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. But I think like the one of in Elves is kind of sweet. I don't know if that's a main deck card, but that sounds like a sideboard option at minimum.
Right.
Yeah, that's like, that seems
if
super
you
interesting.
Get into a grindy game, your opponent's not going to beat that.
Yeah, it's at least interesting to me.
Also, having your kind of Michael, will you talk a little bit more about what you were saying, because I think that's really an interesting point. The you know having a Glimpse of Nature in play when you have your stuff that bounces your other elves back to your hand lets you draw cards a lot throughout multiple turns with this.
Like, all I know is that I've lost a Wirewood Symbiote Elvish Visionary with basically any deck trying to go to the late game. And then this also gets protected by Wirewood Symbiote.
Right.
So it's really hard to get off the table once it starts happening to you. And if they can resolve it once or have like a cavern or some way to force it through over and over again, like when you have like Gaia's Cradle, there's just the
unfair
real
amount of money.
Like actually basically drawing your whole deck in a turn. Right. I mean, we've all had this happen to us. If you played against Legacy Elves, you've played against turns where like they find a glimpse and then they just draw actually 10 cards with it.
Right. Right. And yeah, I mean, Birchlore Rangers, kind of too, just makes, you know, just
exactly.
Makes everything silly.
Birchlore Rangers and Heritage Druid, and, like, it can just get actually out of hand really easily. And the other thing is that it often ends immediately, because then at some point, you know, you have like one or two creatures, you have like a Nettle Sentinel that keeps on tapping, and you finally find, you can just go from like kind of like one Green Sun Zenith to next turn I draw one mana elf, and all of a sudden we're doing it, and eventually find a natural order and kill you.
Right.
So it's not nothing
that you can natural order for it, like if you don't have necessarily a lethal natural order now, which is rare for sure. Like honestly, natural order doesn't need very many creatures to be lethal. But
the thing is that this lets you go off in a different way, right? It just gives you another way to go off instead, like sure, Craterhoof will deal most of it most of the time. But I don't know.
Craterhoof deals way more than it basically every time.
yeah, like four creatures in a Craterhoof is like 100 damage. So.
Yeah. I mean, some combination of Craterhoof and Progenitus is going to be better than Natural Order for basically in every board state. But
yeah, I agree.
I like this as a Green Sun Zenith target.
Sure.
Like, that's fantastic with Heritage Druid or Cradle or both.
You know what else is fantastic? Storms. Beautiful storms. This one. This one's 1,000 years of storm.
I don't think it's fantastic. It's bad, honestly.
What? You don't like storms?
Why don't you go ahead and read it for us?
For 1,000 years?
Yeah, so...
That's so long.
It's expensive, man. It's 4 blue-red for an enchantment that whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, copy it for each other instant sorcery spell you've cast before this turn. Before it this turn. You may choose new targets for the copies.
So this and, like, 3 burn spells is just lethal?
Yeah, it certainly doesn't take a lot, and honestly, I have no idea where, if anywhere, this will ever have a home. But it's a very, very interesting card. It's if it's in play and you untap with it, it's probably the end of the game if your deck is designed in any kind of a way to take advantage of it.
I don't even think your deck has to be designed to take advantage of it. Imagine if you cast, like, 2 Serum Visions and a Sleight of Hand. Like a draw 8.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not saying that it's going to be a huge build around, but I do think that it's probably... you're not going to play it and you're like, you know...
Do the copies create copies of the copies?
No, what?
I don't think so.
Because it's not like actual storm. Okay.
Yeah, no, but like, the first one would be infinite, right? If it was like that.
Oh yeah, I guess that would be true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, like, if
you're
you
thinking,
cast, like,
Matt,
three spells,
you're that, thinking.
If you cast like 3 spells, it's just gonna you're gonna kill your opponent probably.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just imagine like. I'm like thinking about what this card would do at 2 mana, and it's like
it would just be banned in every format.
Yeah,
like
no, but like that's kind of the vacuum I'm trying to put it in. Like, where's like its most broken point, and what does that tell us? Our decks need to look like?
It feels kind of hive mindy to me.
It does feel kind of like
hive-mindy. It's probably a niche card like that.
It's more maybe like Primeval Titan than like Hive Mind. It's like really going to kill them immediately, but if we've built our deck around this card and we untap with it, the game is like definitely over.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if it was... Well, it depends on how you could build a deck to play this card, right? Because you might actually only need one spell in the deck that actually kills them, because you're going to get to draw, you know, your whole deck probably. Pretty easily.
You would need rituals or something like that. It's hard for me to envision this card. My guess would be that at least in standard, this card is a tricky build around, just because we're putting it in the same format as, like, you know, a bunch of people who are going to be playing Assassin's Trophy or whatever.
Right.
And it seems really hard to kill someone the turn you play it. But the flip side, obviously, is that, like, as you start going back formats, it gets harder and harder for, like, extensive testing of cards like this to have happened. So I wouldn't be shocked to see this be, like, kind of powerful in non-standard formats.
Right.
I wouldn't be shocked to see it be completely unplayable either, for whatever that
is. Yeah, I just think this is a very interesting card. It's very pushed as far as power level goes, definitely. It's certainly not the worst version of anything else, right? It's the most powerful version of this effect that's ever been printed. Whether that's good at 6 mana, it's really hard to say, but
it's kind of like
Pyromancer's Ascension,
but
like
you
on
get the copies next turn,
right?
Right,
Yeah. Do you get the copies next turn?
Well, compared to Mind's Desire, you do.
Oh, sure, because you're casting this, and then next turn you untap and then start casting stuff.
Presumably you're not usually casting this and, like, then continue. Although, if you go, like, ritual, ritual, you this, could, like, show and tell sleight of hand, ritual, 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 right? Like, I mean...
Sure.
You can go, like, effectively infinite with this card probably more easily than basically any other card that exists.
Right.
Cool. You know...
At least in recent memory.
Let's move on to the next one, Michael. Why don't you go ahead and read what Matt has next on this list for us.
All right. Matt has Thought Erasure, which is a blue and a black for a sorcery. Target opponent reveals their hand. You choose a non-land card from it. That player discards that card. Surveil one.
Yeah, this card seems incredibly powerful to me. Like, I think that we've proven that 2-mana conditional Thought Seizes are totally fine and standard under the right circumstances. And this one is not only unconditional, but has a pretty great upside in Surveil one. The drawback obviously being that it's two colors, which is significant for sure. But if you're actually just already incentivized to play any kind of a Dimir deck or a deck that, you know, three color deck that includes Dimir, this card just seems completely insane to me.
Yeah, I like this card a lot too. I worry that it's going to be kind of hard to cast a lot of the time.
Sure.
Like, just that blue black.
It doesn't fit into your curve in any meaningful way, right? Like, it doesn't. Like, you have to, like, what deck is this just like, oh, I'm just going to play this turn?
Well, that's, I mean...
I played Transgress the Mind, and it was fine.
Right, but that doesn't, that requires one color of mana.
Yeah, I don't think that there are decks that exist currently, but that doesn't, I have no idea what the decks are going to be in the format, right? Like, it's not hard to imagine a blue-black mid-range deck, and now that Glintsleeve Siphoner is gone, like, your two-drop slot is pretty wide open.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, this is a card that I've thought about as a 2 of in Grixis midrange. But I don't know. I think that that's kind of what its ceiling is like kind of a 2 of in your main deck.
It's tougher in a 3-color deck, I think, because you really want to be able to have... Like, it's not always correct to cast your discard effects as early as possible, but you definitely want to have the option.
Right.
I think this is kind of tough to main deck a bunch of as well. I think just generally, like... I would compare this more to Transgress the Mind than Thoughtseize.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's just.
I mean, that's just going to be true as a 2-mana card versus a 1-mana card.
Yeah. I mean, I think just like main decking a bunch of 2-mana discard is probably not good, but that doesn't mean I don't think this card is good. It means that I think the category that it's in is like, you know, it's nerfed a little bit.
Right.
But that's not a bad thing. I don't want to play a standard format with Thoughtseize in it.
Not another one, right? So soon.
Yeah.
What about Centaur Peacemaker? Do you want to play a format with Centaur Peacemaker?
I mean, I don't want to play against this card if my opponent's casting against me, because I'm probably never beating it. It's one a green and a white for a 3/3 Centaur Cleric. When it enters the battlefield, each player gains 4 life. So I assume if this card is ever cast against you, you just concede.
So, like, here's the thing. Centaur Healer was already, like, really, 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 really good as a sideboard card. Why do we need a better one?
It's symmetrical this time.
No, it's not how this works. It's not how any of this works.
I mean, that was kind of my feeling as well. Like, looking at this card, it's like playing Burn against Collective Brutality, right? Like, there's nothing you can do about it. It's just happening to you. So what is it you want to do? It's bad against this card.
Yeah.
When you're playing the Flame of Keld and your opponent goes like, turn 1, Llanowar Elves, turn 2, this, turn 3, this, turn 4, this, and you're like, I don't know, this looks like what I signed up for. We're both at 40, I guess.
Yep.
And for some reason, like, yeah, this one, it was so funny, because this got spoiled, like, right before Night of Autumn, and I saw this, I was like, this is the sweetest sideboard card for green-white decks. And then Night of Autumn was spoiled, and I was like, this is the same card, but better, but worse.
Wait until I'm playing 8 of them.
That's what I was thinking! What
Michael said, right, which is that if you choose the gain life mode, then you're playing a 2-1. Which, in addition to being a problem against a Chain Whirler, is just a problem with any creature in their deck, right? It doesn't line up well.
Yeah, but I think in those matchups, you're mostly fine trading them off, right? It doesn't matter.
You're going to be playing against the...
Yeah, you're going to play against both!
Life in game 1, and then in game 2 you're going to be playing against Night of Autumn gaining life and this, and they're just going to draw like 5 of that effect, right. And you're just going to get buried.
Right.
Like, nice Wizard's Lightning. Go home.
Yeah, I think this is one of the most powerful sideboard cards for Standard that was spoiled. It's just like, okay, I have a 3-3, and now you can't win. I mostly agree. Michael's usually like way more exaggeratory than I would ever want to be, but I actually think Michael's right here. I think this card's just like a, like you're just dumping, like, fuel on. It's insane. Like, why?
So I think it's actually fine to have cards like this in the format, though. Like, I think it's very powerful, but it's never going to be a main deck card.
Sure.
So I like that as like a sort of a safety valve in case the.
Yes. That's a good. Yeah, I agree.
You know, mono red ever goes off the handle again.
Yeah, I think this card is a really good safety valve, but it's a fire hose. Like, you don't want to be on the receiving end of this. I can tell you that.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't have to have ever played a game against this card to know that I'm never going to beat it.
It makes you wonder if that was the kind of things that they were.
I'm never going to beat it, right? Those are the only two options.
Do you think these are the kind of conversations that they were having in R&D when they were printing Blood Moon? They're like, it's fine. You're not going to main deck it, but it's like a super nice, you know, safety valve for all these decks playing non-basic lands.
I don't know, man. Like, I don't think Blood Moon is a problem in Legacy. Blood Moon was never a problem in a format that didn't exist when they were printing Blood Moon.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's. Right. I don't think that Blood Moon was like even a mistake necessarily, but.
You know what is a mistake? Not getting the opportunity to cast Chromatic Lantern. Which is our next card. It's an artifact. It costs 3 mana. It taps for any color, and it makes all of your lands tap for any color.
This card seems pretty great to me right now. You know, Braid's going out of the format.
Thank God.
Basically, the main deck answers are going to be, you know, possibly Knight of Bottom and Assassin's Trophy. And if they're trophying your Chromatic Lantern, that's just value.
Right.
It just doesn't do anything. Knight of Autumning is actually pretty good, though.
Yeah. It's true.
Right annoying. Stage, that feels awful.
Yeah, I agree. But I don't know how often you're going to play against Knight of Autumn, right? Like, it doesn't really...
It's hard to say.
It doesn't really put me off the card just knowing that Knight of Autumn is a card that exists in the format.
Sure.
But Chromatic Lantern is a pretty sweet one. It didn't see a lot of play at first in the standard format, but it did see play at one point in that standard format for a 5-color deck.
Yeah, that was the sweetest deck!
It was very cool, and I'm excited to see what Chromatic Lantern can do in this format.
I have very fond memories of Chromatic Lantern, because you would cast Chromatic Lantern, and then you'd either cast a Thrag Tusk, or you'd cast Sphinx's Revelation on their end step, and then when they countered your Sphinx's Revelation, you'd untap, tap all of your mana again, and Rakdos return them for their entire hand. It was the most nonsensical, sweet deck I've ever played. Like, I've played Cruel Control, and it's whatever. It's like, whatever, 5-color Cruel is whatever. It wasn't this. This deck was, like, way cooler, way more fun. It was the best time.
Yeah, the 5-color Control deck was super sweet, too, though. Like,
I like casting Cruel.
Violent Outburst and Cryptic Commands and Cruel Ultimatums and, you know, Wrath of God and Elspeth and Cloud Thresher all in the same deck. It was, like, it's pretty intense.
It was just as nonsensical.
Yeah, I mean, Chromatic Lantern's kind of a spicy one, though. Like, you can, you know, play Chromatic Lantern in your mono white decks. You can sideboard Chain Whirlers.
So good. For the mirror.
but like, seriously, if you think that Chromatic Lantern being good is kind of requisite on having more expensive multicolored spells. Right, I mean, that's what drives you to playing a card like Chromatic Lantern, and I haven't done any looking at that kind of stuff, but it's a powerful effect. Like, having perfect mana when we're playing, you know,
Thousand Year Storm,
there, you know, right, yeah, or whatever card you want to play. Like, having just perfect mana is a really powerful thing to attach to a Manalith.
Yeah, it's probably the best Manalith that's ever been printed.
That's true.
That feels like a low standard.
They printed like Key Runes. There was like Rakdos Key Rune saw play. It was like a man land too.
I think the green white one also saw a little bit of play. Like made
the green white one
made like a Watch Wolf.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, let's move on to Michael's cards. Michael, what is the first card that you have on your list?
Well, it was something else. Then I got shut down. So my first card is Find Finality. which is a split card.
Just to be clear, Michael did not get shut down. That's not what happened. Matt told me he wasn't allowed to use the card that somebody else already said. So your card's still on the list.
Find Finality is a split card. Both halves are sorceries. The first half costs a black or a green, and a black or a green is a sorcery and says return up to two target creatures from your graveyard to your hand. And Finality costs four a black and a green and says you may put +1/+1 counters on a creature you control, then all creatures get -4/-4 until end of turn.
This card seems really good in like mid-rangey, like big mid-rangey decks, whether it's like a ramp deck or like a big mid-range control deck. Like when you can cast both sides, like when you want the backside, but the front side can actually be cast sometimes as a top deck, that's like, this card's actually like pretty good.
Yeah, this card kind of reminds me of like Finality kind of reminds me of something like Tragic Arrogance a little bit.
Sure.
And Find, I think, is just like a pretty generically good effect. Mirror-style games.
Let me ask you, how do you think something like Find stacks up to Divination?
Well, I think it's much less playable as like a multi... like, the third Find in the same game... much worse than a third Divination. And obviously, this is just not an early game card. I mean, the secret is that both halves really probably cost at least six. But I think that this is the kind of card you're pretty happy to have one of a lot of the time. I don't know that you're looking to play a ton of this effect, but I would say that ultimately, rather than being better or worse than Divination, I think they're just sort of hard to compare.
Yeah.
Right.
I really like this card. This is one that I was really excited about, so I'm glad it made the list.
I think it's just like it's an interesting modal spell. I really, really, really like modal spells. It's like probably the thing I gravitate to more than basically anything else.
Sure.
In terms of just being interested, and I think that both halves are like, I can imagine casting both halves of this card. Sometimes you look at a modal spell and it's like, well, this mode is just pretty good. It was like Dromoka's Command, right? Dromoka's Command is a modal spell that always read, put +1/+1 counter fight.
Yeah, basically.
Except for when it didn't and it was broken as freaking.
Yeah, except for when it was the end of the game. Yeah.
Sure, but it wasn't like a true modal spell, right? Like,
yeah, whenever you had to sacrifice an enchantment to that, you were losing for sure.
Savaged by it, but it was mostly just like a removal spell.
Whatever, that card was 2 mana Wrath of God. I don't even know what you're talking. Not even, it's 2 mana Plague Wind. It was so annoying.
Definitely wasn't that, but
you know what?
Anyway,
else?
So it's interesting. I would say that it's nice that both halves of these cards seem to be kind of. I mean, they're both good in mid range matchups, but I do think that, you know, Wraths versus card advantage are kind of for different matchups, or at least different board states. But the fact that they do both cost, you know, they're both very late game effects does make me worry about them a little bit. Like, obviously, even though the Finality half is theoretically good against something like Flame of Keld, you're just probably already winning the game if we get to the turn six.
But I think that...
Turn six?
Like... Yeah, it costs four green-blue, right?
Four green black, yeah.
So turn three or four.
Well,
I appreciate that you can.
I wouldn't play it in that deck.
As a card where both halves are probably good in mid rangey matchups, one half is good against control, and one half is hypothetically good against aggressive decks.
Right, it's passable at least.
Yeah, I mean has text at least, and there will be times where like, you know, you find back a Centaur Healer, you know, Knight of Autumn or whatever, right? I mean, like, there are times where you will be able to regrow two creatures and make it fit the curve. I think that just, like, having modes is pretty powerful when you're looking at an effect that's maybe passable anyways.
Sure.
And I think that this card is just, like, it feels like an appropriate power level to me. It's
Fun.
I think it's just a cool looking card.
Fun fact for Matt Klink. You can put the two counters on your Druid of the Cowl, and it survives the minus minus.
So good.
Is that a fun fact?
It's a fun fact for those who watch my deck tech this week. Notion Rain is next. It's one, a black, and a blue. It's a sorcery. You surveil two, then you draw two, then it deals two damage to you. Okay. I've done this before, and this is mostly better than the thing that I've done before.
It's almost always better, and by quite a bit.
Matt, you know how we kept saying our favorite card was Abzan Charm? Look, they reprinted it.
No, this is an Abzan Charm. That one is definitely not, but it is better than Read the Bones.
It's more like Abzan Charm than you'd like to admit.
It's closer to Abzan Charm than Read the Bones, but I mean, Abzan Charm was a lot better than this. Like, yeah, I would still take sure, Abzan Charm over this in a heartbeat.
I agree. But I do think this card is really nice.
Dude, do you guys remember Abzan Charm? Gosh.
I think having some of these sort of smoothing effects is just really enjoyable. I think that just like having cards that sort of have scry-style effects in the early mid-game just make for more game where, you know, both players are participating.
Yeah, I really like this card in like any mid-range deck. It's funny. Like, the amount that we played Read the Bones happily always surprised me. It was like, man, I really want to draw Read the Bones in this matchup. I really want to draw Read the Bones in this matchup. And, like,
it's just, it plays better than it looks.
Yeah, and I think this card will play even better than that. Like, I think that the type of mid-range decks that are going to want this are already going to be, are going to actually be able to, like the surreal part. And that's sweet.
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing any Jumpstart cards in your deck, Surveil is kind of great.
Yeah, so.
Right, like, I think that this is the kind of card where, like, this surveils, but it doesn't ask very much of you. Right, like, you don't have to be going super hard on some sort of, like, Jumpstart Surveil theme deck for this card to be pretty good. You know.
Yeah, I mean, clearly this
kinds of things that just interact with the graveyard in profitable ways.
Right, exactly.
Clearly this card is playable with no graveyard interaction at all.
Right.
Yeah,
and it's just even better if you do.
I'm really upset that the next card is on this list, though, Michael, and I don't know what's happening in my life.
So, Unmoored Ego costs one in blue and a black for a sorcery, and says, choose a card name, search target opponent's graveyard hand or library for up to four cards with that name, and exile them. That player shuffles their library, then draws a card for each card exiled from their hand this way.
You, like, can't actually name a basic land fast enough to make that upside good, right?
I'm not trying to name.
You can name non-basic lands, though.
But okay. So like you just
nice
wanted you just
shift deck.
Yeah,
nice name. Tron deck.
Yeah, but
nice
that people already do that.
Deck. With what?
But they like you can already just take all the Karns out of their deck, or you can already just take all the Titans out of their deck, or all the Scapeships out of their deck. You're saying because you can specifically take the lands out of those decks, suddenly they're not playable?
I can guarantee you that naming Primeval Titan is worse than naming Velikut.
Well, I agree with that. That's not what I'm saying.
By a lot. I don't think this is like even kind of
close. I don't think it's close either, but I'm just saying, like, how does this, because you can suddenly name a different card, like the it's makes the, like an idea that's basically never works suddenly be okay?
It's just the best version of this card that's ever been printed, right? Like, Lost Legacy has already seen play. Like,
yeah, but nobody's ever cast a Lost Legacy's ever won.
Extraction.
That's not true. It's seen play in Legacy sideboards before.
That doesn't mean it was right.
I think this card is good.
All right. I'll just disagree on this one.
Why don't you think that's effective?
I just think that, like, it has to be so narrow and... first of all, it's taking up an important sideboard slot, right? And you're basically you're saying that this thing is going to do more than other sideboard cards that you have options for, right?
I don't think this card is narrow at all. I think this card is extremely broad. That's what I like about it.
But the action that you're taking is not. I don't know. I think that they'll just win through
this
it.
This card against KCI, Tron, Scapeshift.
Yeah.
I mean, basically,
I'm sure that there, if you, yeah, if you think about it for long enough, you'll figure out plenty of decks that can't win, right?
Yeah, I think like basically any combo deck is going to really struggle with this card.
So we're okay. I will be happy to be wrong. Like, but any time this has ever been cast against me in any of its other versions, in any deck, I've ever played, it was I won. It was
better than any version of this card that has ever been cast against.
Well, even beyond that, let's also point out that you've probably never played a deck where that was correct to side that in against you.
I mean,
maybe back when you were playing Oops All Spells, it would probably have been. Only if they had Dark Ritual in their deck, right?
Sure, like, that even seems not that great.
I mean, convince me that if your opponent's on the play and you're playing Tron, you're ever beating this card.
What? I mean, yeah, you just cast your spells, Michael. Like, they already cast their spells through...
six mana Wyrmcoils and seven mana Karns. Yeah, they can beat it, but...
I mean, if your opponent's playing, like, Cryptic
You just commands, paid three mana and discard a card to do nothing, and then I just cast my spells.
No, you play a third land and pass the turn for five more turns.
Yeah, I don't find that it happens that way, man.
Well, that's definitely going to be how it's going to happen. Whether or not that leads to a win,
this is
different.
The only way to beating Tron, and I have a very positive matchup, I think, in that matchup. I mean, it's the same thing. It's just like one card versus multi cards, and I agree that there's a cost of playing a sideboard card, but I think this card is effective in a lot of matchups.
Yeah, like I said, I will be happy to be wrong if I'm wrong. Like, I like strong sideboard cards being added to Modern because I think it makes Modern better. So if this card suddenly, like, is much better than I think it is, and suddenly these decks can play this, then that's awesome. Like,
I mean, my bigger concern is that decks don't exist that want this effect as much. Like, I'm not sure that, you know, Grixis anything or Esper anything is a real deck.
Yeah.
I think if this was one blue, I mean, I obviously you wouldn't cost it that way, but I think if this card was just blue, this card would be
different, yeah.
Very, very, very.
Or even possibly just black, right? Like,
sure.
Lost Legacy already sees play.
Yeah.
What do we have next?
The next card I listed was Charnel Troll, which is one a black and a green for a 4/4 trample. At the beginning of your upkeep, exile a creature card from your graveyard. If you +1/+1 counter on Charnel Troll, otherwise sacrifice it, and then you can pay black, green, and discard a creature card to put a +1/+1 counter on it.
Tell us about this.
Well, I like synergy cards and engine decks.
Right.
And I really like Stitcher's Supplier.
Sure.
And this card is kind of vanilla, but like, if you can meet the condition, this thing just runs away with the game on its own.
Yes, it's definitely like, going to be pretty large. I worry, though, that a little bit that it doesn't have... Yeah, I mean, it has trample, but, like... I worry just that it doesn't have a higher impact on the game than that. Like, if I can get value out of the discard, like, if there's some reason that I want this particular card in the graveyard other than to exile to the Charnel Troll, then I'm mostly on board, but I don't know what looks like that at the moment.
Fair enough. I certainly, this is a card I think is really interesting. But I haven't played with it yet. Obviously,
this is the kind of card.
Cool is if they had creatures with Jumpstart in the format.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, I mean there are some interesting.
I think this card's reasonable. Yeah. We'll see. Like, I'm not the type of person that could build a deck around this, but.
They had the other really interesting card that I saw today that was kind of like this. It's like a mix between this and Putrid Leech. That's like, discard a card to give it +2/+2 and trample until end of turn, but you can only activate it once a turn.
I don't know what that card is.
I mean, that plays pretty well with this card.
Yeah, it does. I'm pretty sure it's just two... Is it two mana 2/2 that gets +2/+2 when you discard a card?
I think this card plays pretty well with, like, the new Fleshbag Marauder.
That card seems
really
very
well
good
with
too.
Steel Leaf Champion. I think it plays really well with anything with Explore, like Jade Light Ranger or Merfolk Branchwalker.
Sure.
Glow Spore Shaman. I think it plays well with kind of a lot of stuff. I don't know, you know, how that'll end up working out, but I think that it's a cool kind of semi build around, right? Like ultimately it's just a big creature, which it's good and bad. It's a big creature. Its condition also doesn't seem unreasonable to me.
Sure. Well, Runaway Steamkin is next. It's 1 red and 1 for a 1/1 elemental. Whenever you cast a red spell, if Runaway Steamkin has fewer than 3 +1/+1 counters on it, put a 1/1 counter on it, and then you can remove 3 counters from it to add 3 mana to your mana pool. So, the thing that I've seen... So, first of all, cast a red spell, for those who don't know, means any red spell that comes on the stack. It doesn't have to be an instant or sorcery, which a lot of people sometimes think. So basically, if I cast Burning Tree in this, I have a giant dude. The giantest dudes.
Yeah, I've seen some kind of 8-whack on crack lists with this, and it seems really sweet to me.
The 3 red mana actually seems like really powerful in 8-whack, because you can actually just dump your whole hand. Because, like, and then the counters come back on it. It seems kind of insane in that deck.
So, is it worth taking turn 2 off, though, to make these turn 3s potentially more explosive?
You don't need to. You play the first Burning Tree. Oh, I see what you're saying.
No, so the lists I was seeing were, like, way more all-in than that. And I goldfished it a few times and had a bunch of turn 2 and turn 3 kills.
So what is it? How does it work exactly?
Yeah, what's
it's playing Simeon, Spirit Guide, and Pact of Titan.
Oh.
Okay, interesting.
Like, I think I had...
I saw some...
Freeze in a row at one point.
I think...
Okay. Kind of cool.
Was it Shaheen Serrani that posted that? Somebody posted...
No, it was... It was, like, Margin...
No, that's not who I saw. That's not who I saw, but that either way, yeah, I think that this card like has "bust me" written all over it.
Yeah, this card is super cool, regardless. Yeah, I am mostly into this. Honestly, it actually functions almost exactly the same as a Goblin Electromancer or a Brawl on the turn you're going off in Storm, right? Except for the fact that you have to have like it doesn't work for the spell right away, but it gives you the mana back.
Yeah, but if you imagine sort of that same effect, except it also attacks as a 4/4 at the end of it, that's kind of what it was doing in these 8-whack hands.
Sure.
And it was... It
that's
was
actually
like
kind of...
colored costs of creatures.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking it was doing. It was like...
insane. Like, when you remove the counters and then go, like, devastating summons, reckless bushwhacker.
Right.
You know,
Pact of the Titan like, seems super, super hot.
Yeah, that and Simeon Spirit Guide in combination with this card, like, there are just some hands where you're looking at it and you're like, oh man, this is like a turn 2 kill, and it's like not that close.
Right.
It's like a substantially overkill turn 2 kill. Yeah, it is really cool.
So you're like, you're pacting to put a counter on this, bushwhacking, that's so much damage.
Yeah, no, it can just, like...
It's the broken version of Burning Tree Emissary. You're like, this guy, pack, reckless bushwhacker, kill you.
I mean, if you're just, like, this on turn 2, and your opponent just doesn't kill it, like, you're probably gonna kill them on turn 3.
Does Devastating Summon make XX equal to X? What does it make?
Like, you're just gonna cast
it makes 2 XXs, I believe.
Oh.
Equal the number of lands you sacrifice.
So it's not XXX, it's just X times 2.
It's,
XX times 2.
I think it only costs 1 mana to cast, and it's just you sacrifice X lands, and then they become 2 XXs.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that card is obviously really good with Runaway Steamkin. It's like a really good thing to do with one of those 3 mana. I just think this card is cool. I don't know actually how good it is. And really, most of the cards on my list were just things I thought were cool.
Yeah, I mean, certainly mine as well. Like, I'm not expecting, you know.
I don't know that we'll be playing Runaway Steamkin decks in any format, especially not in standard. But it is really cool.
I think this whole set is kind of just like a nice refresher, and it in itself has felt really cool for those who have been looking at spoilers, for those who are getting ready to build decks. They're excited for Standard Rotate. Like, this is just a breath of fresh air, and it's really exciting. So thank you, everybody, for listening this week. It's nice to kind of do one of these laid-back episodes after these guys had to do it all by themselves last week. Then we were in Detroit, and, you know, kind of just getting to lay back, talk about cards, and enjoy each other's company. It's really fun for us. So thank you so much to everybody who let us do that this week and who's listening. So don't forget to go to patreon.com/ccmtg to become a patron of the show. We really appreciate everybody who's doing that. It like, legitimately means the world to me. So you can find me at Spencer13H. You can find Matt at The Witchling. You can find Michael at MagicMikeMTG. You can find the show at CCMTG. You can like them on Facebook at Constructive Criticism. Join the Constructive Criticism family. Talk to other people who are trying to improve Magic just like you. You can join our new Discord. That's for all of Heezy Game Media. There's stuff for anime. There's stuff for Smash. There's stuff for fantasy football. It's basically just a nerd culture channel that also happens to have a lot of Magic the Gathering channels. You can check that out on our homepage. And I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to join that Discord. Guys, what did you learn this week?
I mostly learned just some interesting things about how you each felt about different cards that we talked about. I felt like it was kind of interesting that you were just completely completely against any kind of memory side effect. And I think it does get a bad reputation because people board it in so many bad spots where it's just completely nonsense. But Memoricide is actually a pretty powerful effect overall.
So I've cast Lost Legacy myself, right? And I've won games where I've done it. My problem is that I don't ever lose to it. And like...
Well, I mean, that's it's just like results-oriented then completely?
No, it's... No. It's not... It's not... It's that I don't know that I would have lost the game anyway. Like... I don't know that it actually won me the game ever. I've won games where I've cast it, but I've never lost to it. Like I mean, sure, I guess let's call it results oriented, but I've also never seen somebody lose to it cast. It just doesn't happen. It never has a positive impact on the game. And like
I think it's really a good card in Standard, but I'm not really interested in where do you go for Standard.
Yeah. I think that I'll be happy to be wrong if like this can be a sideboard card that hooks up modern players. Then I'm always for that. So
I mean, if I would that this card, I think is closer in power level to Surgical Extraction than it is to Lost Legacy.
That would be powerful because Surgical Extraction is actually a really good card.
I mean, Surgical Extraction might be the best sideboard card ever printed. So I don't think it's that good, but
I think it's closer to that than Lost Legacy. That you know. That is what I said, but that does not mean I think it's as good as Surgical Extraction, obviously.
All right. What did you learn this week, Michael?
Well, I learned that I learned why I'm interested in Magic and in cards. And in my brain, I pretty much only ever think of engine decks.
Sure.
That's like actually the only thing I'm remotely interested in. Basically ever. So when I'm looking at cards, I'm always like, okay, but like, how can we make this card the centerpiece of the deck? And I don't know that that's actually helpful for card evaluation, but it's certainly enjoyable for thinking about them.
I learned that I'm really excited for rotation. Like, this is the most excited I've ever been for a rotation. It's not like my least favorite format, but it's the most excited I've ever been for a rotation. Mostly because we're also coming off of Modern Season, and I hate Modern Season, and I hate talking about Modern, and I feel like we have to do it more during Modern Season. But also, I'm really sick of the Standard Season. I was just done. I'm really excited for it, and like talking about these cards really excited me. Like I legitimately am like falling in love with Magic all over again due to this set. So good job on Wizards.
Excellent.
All right. We'll talk to you guys all later, and we'll see you next week where we will have three guests. Bye.